I want to invite you to reach for your handout. These are an assortment of proverbs that I had the particular delight of discovering years and years ago when I was studying the Proverbs in seminary. And in studying the Proverbs, most of Proverbs are just practical, daily life experience aphorisms that give you a short summary of just how to live rightly, to live well, to live an ordered and wise life. But on the surface, you might think that it's all just practical, but in the Proverbs repertoire is a number of Proverbs that penetrate deep below the surface into matters of the heart in such a way that it gets a bit uncomfortable. So I'm telling you right up front, I give this disclaimer, this may be a little bit challenging. We're going to deep places this morning, but we're doing it for good reason. And that good reason is, if we want to create a good community or a good society or a good nation, anytime you're trying to create a moral or virtuous community, there are three essential elements to make it happen. And if any one of the three is missing, you don't have a good society, you don't have a good community. And you can use the picture of ships in formation on a journey to demonstrate what three elements are necessary in order to have a good society. You need to, number one, have ships that are heading in the same direction. There needs to be a common vision and a shared mission that all the ships are heading in one way. Otherwise, you don't have a community anymore. They're separating all over the place. You secondly need to have ships that don't bump into each other. They can't crash into each other, because if they do, no matter what their mission is, they're going to fail in their mission. They won't get there. But thirdly, there must be one other thing, and this is the most forgotten one. Each vessel must be ship-shape. Each vessel must be running properly. Because it doesn't matter what the mission is, and it doesn't matter if people don't bump into you. If you, as an individual ship, sink, then you have lost community. Now, when you begin to think of these three elements, you can see how they play out in both American society and within the context of the church. The same direction has to do with having common ideals. We as North Americans in the United States of America have common ideals. We believe that all people are created equal, all have the inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those are the ideals that are meant to steer the ship, to have all going in the same direction. In the church, we have ideals that we are to fear God, which means take God seriously. That we are called to seek God and seek first God's kingdom and to try to live out the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. So there are ideals. When we talk about not crashing, we're talking about shared ethics. For again, North Americans, we have laws that prevent us from harming others or from undermining or taking away other people's rights. Those are meant to help guide us so that we don't crash into each other. In the church, we have the commands of Christ. Love your enemies. Be patient. Be merciful. Be kind. Be forgiving. And on you could go with the commands that are meant to keep us from crashing into each other and hurting one another. But finally, and again, the most forgotten, is when we talk about each ship running properly, we're talking about a category that is often overlooked, and that is the category of self-care or of understanding. And this may be the most important element of the three, because all the ideals in the world and all the morals and ethics in the world are useless if individual ships are sinking. There is a need to recognize all three elements are important, and you can kind of hear it if you listen for it in Jesus' great command. We didn't read it this morning. We did it first service, but you're familiar with the story. Someone asked Jesus, what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus is ready right away, and he says, love the Lord God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. And those are the three. Love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. That's the ideal. That's the common ideal that's to guide the community of God's people. Love your neighbor. There's where the morals and ethics come in so that we don't crash into each other. But we often forget it's love your neighbor as you love yourself. that there must be a certain self-care and self-understanding in order that we might truly have compassionate love for our neighbor, and in order that we might truly participate in this mission, this ideal of moving forward. What I'm trying to suggest with this analogy is it's inseparable to think about community and the individual. You can't take one away from the other. The individual and community are always inseparably interlinked, so much so that we can be as concerned as we want about civil and social justice issues, about all being treated equally and all about fair laws. But if we aren't as equally concerned about individual wellness, of people being well and flourishing, of understanding themselves and being ship-shape, we're missing out on both spheres of what makes for a good society. Well, once we go down that route, we realize that the book of Proverbs agrees with us, that self-care and self-understanding are just as important as right ideals and right morals. The book of Proverbs deals with public spaces like the marketplace and government and economy, speaking of poverty, wealth, and rich and poor. It speaks of public spaces like family and marriage and parenting, but it also, and you heard it as I read these Proverbs, deals with matters of the heart. So we're looking at some very personal and intimate Proverbs that are going to show uncanny sensitivity to the inner workings of the human heart. And whenever we talk about heart, just know this. We're using a term that speaks of the core of who we are. It goes down so deep into the secret places, into the dark interior, that we don't really know the fullness of our own heart, much less know others' hearts. We are going into that deep and secret place that sometimes is manifest outwardly, but oftentimes is not, and sometimes isn't even manifest to ourselves. And we're doing it to gain knowledge, self-knowledge, and self-awareness, that we might, at the end of the day, be shipshape, that our ship might be running properly. So I want to invite you to follow along as I go through some of these Proverbs, and you'll see how this plays out. I tried to give them categories, but you can ignore the categories if you want. I'm just going to kind of go down each one. The first proverb reads, "Even in laughter, the heart may be in pain." Now hear that. Even in laughter, the heart may be in pain, which is the Proverbs writer awareness that your inner life is not always reflected on the outside. That positive emotions on the surface, laughter and joy, may hide deep and painful feelings. I can think of an endless amount of comedians for whom that is true. That on the outside, they just want to make everyone laugh. They look chipper, they look joyful, and inside is a deep brokenness. Because a happy face can hide a broken heart. That's why I use that clown illustration with the kids. We can hide behind the mask, we can paint the smile, but the reality is we haven't touched the heart. A painted smile doesn't touch our heart, and there are times when things are going on within which aren't manifest in any way on the surface. Which is a way of saying what appears on the surface of all of our lives may not be the whole story. I'd go one step further. What appears on the surface is never the whole story. For the Proverbs writer, he wants us to be aware that's true for everyone in this room. This isn't true just for the depressed, or the schizophrenic, or the deeply disturbed. That this is true for everyone. What is on the surface never reflects the whole story of one's inner life. There are deep rumblings always going on beneath the surface. Which then leads one to the second proverb. The heart knows its own bitterness, which is a way of saying, and this is probably the most depressing thing I'll say here this morning, although I believe it's true with all my heart, we all walk a lonely path with respect to our inner lives, because we're the only one experiencing them. We're the only one feeling them. No one really can know what's going on inside another person. That's why when we tell someone something superficial like, "I know how you feel," we ought to immediately take that back. We don't know how they feel. We may have gone through the same circumstance, but we still don't know how they feel. We don't understand another person's pain. And one of the things we never want to do is kind of try to understand a person's pain by comparing their sufferings with another person's sufferings. I've heard many people say, "Hey, buck up. You know, you can handle this. Hey, you're not suffering like they are on the other side of the world." And the fact is, of course you're not. But you're still suffering, and that's your suffering. That's their suffering. It could be for different reasons and reasons we might want to address from a social justice perspective. But your suffering is your own. You're not feeling their pain. They are uniquely bearing it themselves, just like you are uniquely bearing your own pain. Our own pain, our own inner life is something that we bear to the point that we have to bear it alone. No one can bear it for us. They can only bear it with us. Are you following me there? They cannot bear it for us. It's ours to carry alone. No one else can carry it. They can only bear it with us. Now, I love the second half of that proverb. The heart knows its own bitterness, and a stranger does not share its joy. And I love it just because that also shows a part of the heart. I can't tell you how many times I've been on the elliptical cross trainer at Planet Fitness, or I've been driving my car and I'm listening to music because music connects to me deeply. And I'll listen to a song by, these are groups you'll never hear of, they'll never get played on the radio, Fido, Moon Tree, Moon Safari, Carp Tree, Dream Theater you may have heard of, or I'll hear a band like Rush or other things, some you might be more familiar with, and I'll just weep. And I weep because it's so beautiful. It's so epic. It's talent beyond anything I can fathom. And my heart is overwhelmed by the beauty and the joy. And literally, my heart is lifted into like the 10th heaven as I'm sitting there on the elliptical listening. Oh my gosh. And what I realize is, as the proverb says, a stranger does not share its joy. One of the lonelinesses of that is no one else is ever going to feel that way. Now, occasionally you run into someone that shares those same things, and that's when friendships occur. You find, oh, you know, you love this too? This moves you too? Ah, and friendships begin. But for the most part, what we love, and you have your own unique things, we kind of share alone. It's something that we have as our own. A stranger doesn't share its joy. Well, all of these lonely things that we experience in the inner life create a cluster of proverbs that deal with emotional health, which remind us that even though we don't know anyone's pains or joys, we all know that the inner life can be overwhelming. And that's what these proverbs are about, to show us how the inner life has outward manifestations. So, for example, our first proverb under emotional health, a joyful heart makes a cheerful face. But when the heart is sad, the spirit is broken. So when the heart's broken, it's not just that physically you might see someone with a sad face, but they have a broken spirit. I mean, broken heart. Deep within, there's just crevices and earthquakes and bombardment. There's this inner pain that in many ways rivals and sometimes surpasses outward physical pain. And indeed, that's what the next proverb highlights. The human spirit can endure in sickness, but a crushed spirit who can bear? Which is to say, pain is more than physical, and the Proverbs writer knows that. That a human spirit can endure sickness. You get a diagnosis. It might be terrible. It might be tragic. But at least you can say, here's what I've got. Here's the sickness. Here's the deal. Here's what I need to deal with. Here's the treatment I need to go through. That's an incredible ordeal that probably involves all kinds of other deep anguishes and pains. But at least you can say, I've got a name for it, and I can do something about it. But there's something about a crushed spirit that is hard to bear. And our Proverbs writer is admitting very clearly health is not just physical. Pain is not just physical. Pain goes to the depths of mental and emotional and spiritual levels, so much so that that deep inner pain can manifest outwardly in our physical being. The fourth proverb down, the third and fourth, a heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy or deep dissettlement rots the bones. So that's manifest in one's physical stature, in your bones. A joyful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones. Again, the same idea that what's happening inward in the heart, the spirit, is having manifestations outwardly. We see that at times. I know there are times I get so full of anxiety that my body starts itching and rashes develop. And I think that there's something going on inwardly that's being manifest outwardly, and you begin to see how deep this thing called heart goes. Finally, you have the fifth proverb there, which I used again and again in my singles ministry for my first 10 and a half years as a pastor. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. When our hearts are broken, our spirits are crushed, and there seems no end to it. It just goes on and on and never seems to stop. There is a sense in which the heart can just wither in its own sickness. When delay in those things we anticipate and hope for lead to frustration and disappointment and depression, we begin to feel the weight of heart sickness. I worked with singles 10 and a half years. I saw singles go from partner to partner. They wanted to find a mate. They wanted to start a family. And one partner didn't work out. They moved to the next partner. And then the time clock was running out. They wanted to have kids. And on you go. And I could see the heartbreak, the disappointment, the shattered dreams, the fractures in the soul, the awareness that there was something going on there that was deeper than just finding a mate. It was something that was deferring this hope that made their hearts sick. We know that in other areas of life, when we keep hoping things will get better, but they don't, when we have misbehaving children that just seem to never get their heads straight, when we have marriages that are troubled, when our job promotions don't come true, or we don't feel like our career's on the trajectory that it should be, and things keep slipping from our grasp, all those things, hope deferred, makes the heart sick. So we see, as you move down these Proverbs, what's on the surface, appearance is deceiving, may not really be what's going on. We're all bearing our own bitterness alone that has manifestations that are so deep it rivals physical pain at times. So that the question then becomes, since we're dealing with Proverbs, what's the solution? What do we do? How can we help someone that's heart is broken? How can we help ourselves? Well, this last proverb on your first page is one of my favorites. Because I just think this is sometimes what we tend to do because we don't know what else to do. If you look at the final proverb there relating to the whole person, listen to this. Like one who takes off a garment on a cold day, or like vinegar on soda, is he who sings songs to a troubled heart. Now, what this is picturing is someone who sees someone whose heart is broken, whose spirit's in anguish. And they think the solution is to go up beside them and sing, "Don't worry, be happy, have a cheerful optimism about this, think only of the positive, get rid of the net." You know, someone that comes up and is singing these happy songs thinking, "I'll just be so positive, I'll be so happy, I'll be so cheerful," that's got to help them. And notice what the Proverbs writer says, like one who takes off a garment on a cold day. If it's cold outside in the middle of winter and someone rips off your coat, they haven't helped you. You're colder. Like vinegar on soda, you put these things together, they violently react. The point of this proverb is to say that happiness at times just aggravates a troubled heart. It doesn't help, it aggravates. So that the solution is better in Romans 12 when Paul says, "Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep." It may be that instead of going there trying to cheer up, we need to try to share the space of where the person's at, to respect where they're at, and to understand that what I need to do is just bear this with you instead of trying to remove it from you. There are a couple other ways to help that are on the back, but they involve wisdom. They're not always the right ways, but they can be some ways that we can help those who have deep and broken hearts and spirits. You have a healing presence, the first proverb on the second page or the backside. Bright eyes, glad in the heart. Good news gives health to the bones. Can't tell you how many times I've visited people that are shut in or that are in the hospital, and it's not like you can help their broken spirit. It's not like you can, lift them out of whatever they're in, but you can share good news. You can brighten their eyes. And I've seen people who are in a very dark place as far as physically, they clearly are not going to get well, have their eyes gladdened by the fact that the gospel will go on. Church is moving forward. Families are still, working together. Just the good news. Now, not always, but this is kind of how that healing presence, that presence of Christ that is bearing with them and bringing them hope, not trying to fix them, but bringing them good news that they can at least see there's more to life than just the heartache they're presently experiencing. Then you have a couple of proverbs on healing words. Gracious words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. You've certainly tasted that honeycomb before, where you've been in a very dark or difficult place and someone just brings a healing word. Even if it's just a word of encouragement, or "You'll make this," or "I'll be with you," or "I'm standing beside you," "I love you," "I'm thinking of you." There are healing words. And then finally, anxiety in a man's heart weighs it down, but a good word can make it glad. Now there's wisdom. in knowing when to say words, to know what might help, because we might be pouring cold water on someone at times or removing their garment. And that's how wisdom works. We got to assess the situation. Well, let me draw this to a conclusion by stating what is probably obvious, but perhaps not obvious enough that we remember it. Because we're often trying to make people fill the role that only God can have in our lives. Because here's at the end of the truth at the end of the day. We all walk a lonely path with respect to our inner lives. No one can fully understand what's going on within. We ourselves have trouble fully understanding. There's only one who knows our hearts through and through, in and out, backwards and forwards, who knows deeper and darker places than you're willing to admit, who knows greater potential than you're willing to act on, who sees the fullness of all that you are and still embraces and loves and calls you to be His child. The God of the heart in the book of Proverbs, and indeed throughout the entirety of the Scriptures, is a God who is closer to us than our own breath, like Augustine said in the 4th century. He knows us inside and out better than we know ourselves. Our heart might be a mystery to us. Our heart is not a mystery to God. And that's why at times we need to take advantage of that relationship and lean upon it far more than we do, because what we tend to do is we make others fill that role of God and we try to make them meet the deepest longings and needs of our soul as if somehow they can fully understand our own heart, even though we don't ourselves. And when we try to make someone fill that role, they collapse under the pressure. They do not fulfill our expectations, because only God can know us that deeply and love us so faithfully. So in light of that, I invite you to value this relationship with God highly and to act upon it. If you look at this last cluster of Proverbs, Sheol and Abaddon lie open before the Lord. Sheol is the place of the grave. Abaddon is a place of destruction. And the idea is these places that are secret, particularly the grave, they are completely open to the Lord. So how much more the hearts of humankind? How much more the hearts of humankind? So that what we need to do is Proverbs 3:5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. What we need to do sometimes when we're dealing with matters of the heart is not to try to make our friend bear the weight that only God can bear, but pray like the psalmist does in Psalm 42. It's on your page. Why, my soul, are you downcast? Why are you so disturbed within me? Pour your hope in God, and I will yet praise Him, my Savior and my God. Do you notice the psalmist does not deny their depression, their downcastness, their devastation? They look at it and say, I can't let that be the final thing. And so the psalmist cries out to God, who knows that pain, who knows that suffering, and says, there is my hope. All this leads us to the most important proverb, perhaps in the book of Proverbs, Proverbs 4:23. Above all else, are you there with me? You know what above all else means? First priority. This is most important. Don't miss this. Above all else, the Proverbs writer says, in regard to wisdom, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Everything depends on it. That's why in the three things that are necessary for a virtuous society, we can have a common mission going in the same direction. We can have common laws that keep us from crashing into each other. But the most important thing is that the ship is ship shape. Because if that's not happening, all of that that is occurring is irrelevant as the ship sinks to the bottom of the ocean. So the Proverbs writer is very concerned about these deep places of the heart. And he's very concerned not just to be self-aware, not just to understand himself. But he knows if he understands these deep places of his heart, he can then understand that everyone has these deep places. And if he can learn to have compassion and understanding for all of his challenges, then it will lead to a greater compassion and understanding of everyone else's challenges. One of the reasons we love others as we love ourselves is we tend to treat others how we treat ourselves. If we're constantly putting ourselves down, if we're constantly saying we're worthless, well, then everyone else is too. If we're constantly angry at ourselves, well, then we're angry at everyone else. We do that. That's how things roll. And here we're told, no. Understand these deep places. Have compassion. Everyone's got it. Everyone's fighting this great battle. And if you can begin to love there, then you can love others from the heart. You love them in compassion because you've gained a certain empathy. What you do is you essentially move from seeing your heart as this mirror where you're learning and understanding yourself and becoming more self-aware. You move from it being a mirror, which is necessary in some parts, to it being a window. And once you move from it being a mirror to a window, then you realize everyone's in the same boat. Everyone's just like me. Everyone's fighting a great battle. This is a predicament we're all in. You have never met a person who's not battling to keep their ship shipshape. You never have. Even you might think they have it all together. You've never met a person that is not battling. You've never looked into the eyes of someone who God doesn't so deeply love. And I mean everyone. You've never looked into the eyes of anyone whom God doesn't love. And you then, therefore, have never looked into the eyes of anyone who's not fighting a great battle on the battleground of the heart. Which is why Plato's words that I end with are so appropriate. At least it's attributed to Plato. Be kind. Everyone you know is fighting a great battle. Everyone. And to the extent we admit that we are and understand ourselves and keep ship shape, to that extent we're able to love others as we love ourselves and then love God with all our heart, soul, strength, and mind. Would you pray with me?